The overhead page announced that Joint Commission was there. It was our turn. During the survey, they were doing a tracer, which is when they pick some patients off a list of admitted patients, usually randomly, and follow those patients from admission to where they're currently at in their hospital stay. A lot of the things they look at are nursing and physician documentation, but they also look at nutrition. Of course they do, because nutrition is a critical part of patient care and treatment. Sometimes they'll ask to see the diet order of a patient on the unit and then come down to the kitchen and want to see the meal history for that patient. They might want to see how the kitchen works, such as how we prepare and deliver trays to the patients. During this specific tracer, the surveyor asked about the dietitian documentation. The patient was on a consistent carbohydrate renal diet, and the surveyor wanted to see if the patient had been educated. The patient thankfully had been. Then she wanted to see if the education was done in the patient's preferred language. Documenting translation services or any translation done with the patient should be in the note so you can easily speak to it if someone asks. On top of that, she also wanted to know if we had accommodated their cultural food preferences. She asked what type of food we offered and what the process was if someone didn't like what was on the menu. Basically, what she was looking for is that food preferences are taken and accommodated for these patients. Fortunately, she was happy with what she saw. And this surveyor was really great. She took the time to explain why she was asking the things she was. The goal for every patient is to treat them and send them home when they're stable and it's safe to do so, because people heal best in their home environment. And in order for people to take care of themselves, they need to know what to do to manage their situation on their own, which of course includes nutrition. Providing education and information in someone's preferred language is not only good patient care, it also shows the patient's respected, cared for, and seen. I'm Jana Nickel, and this is the RD Exam Made Easy podcast. Well, hey there. Today we're talking about religious dietary practices, which is something that will come up regardless of where you work. This world is beautiful and full of diverse populations and so many fabulous cultures. As dietitians, you'll have the opportunity to work with people from all different backgrounds, and having an understanding and respect for other cultures and religious dietary practices will help your clients and patients feel truly cared for so they can lead their best life. Which I truly believe is why we're here. That's the beauty of being a dietitian. Before we start talking about this topic, I wanted to give a shout out to a new amazing dietitian, Madison Rockford, who just passed the RD exam. It was a long journey for her to get to this point, so she's super excited to finally close that chapter and move on with her career. Such an amazing feeling. I couldn't be happier for her. She's super ambitious and excited to use the RD credentials she worked so hard for. Great job, Madison. You did it. Congratulations. Thanks for sharing your fabulous news with me so I can share it with all these amazing listeners. So I love the content of this episode because it's really relevant. I wouldn't be surprised if you're asked something about cultural foods and religious dietary practices on the exam. But beyond the exam, you'll definitely work with people from different cultures and different views, because that's the world we live in. Throughout the years, I've worked with so many patients from different backgrounds, and I've learned so much from all of them. I'm really grateful for those moments. I want to review some religious dietary practices and specific diets that might show up on the exam and will definitely show up in your career. So let's go over some of those so you feel prepared and confident to nail those questions. Now, I want to be honest and say that I might miss some diets because this world is big with many different cultures. so I can't say I'm going to do a complete review of every culture, but I wanted to touch on some of the common ones. And I want to say before I get started that even within the cultures you're going to learn today, there are variations. For example, I know many Jewish people who sort of follow a kosher diet, but they never fast. On the other hand, I know other Jewish people who follow a strict kosher diet and celebrate all the holidays and they do fasting. So the information I share today is the traditional information, but like with anything in life, it's not always black and white. There's often a gray area. What I've learned is the best way to proceed when you aren't certain is to simply ask the patient. Ask what food someone will and will not eat, and be respectful. You can't go wrong with that. And something else to keep in mind, Joint Commission could ask about the demographics at the facility you work at. So if you work in food service or clinical and have oversight of the menu, you want to make sure that your menu represents the demographic in your community. You also need to make sure that the nutritionals for the foods provided on your menu meet the nutritional needs of your average patient. So please be aware that this information is really important for multiple reasons. It's a regulatory thing, but more than that, it shows representation for the people living in your community. Okay, so let's get started with a halal diet, which is followed by Muslims. The halal diet includes foods that are considered to be clean. That's what's meant by halal. This means that foods such as pork and pork products, carnivorous animals, and birds of prey such as raptors are not allowed on the diet. Birds of prey eat smaller animals such as mice and rats, so they're not allowed on the diet. Meat and poultry are allowed, however, the animal needs to be slaughtered a specific way in order for the meat to be halal. Alcohol and other intoxicants aren't allowed. Coffee and tea can be consumed, although it might not be allowed for some people. So again, ask and see if the person will drink coffee and tea. I've had some patients that are more liberal with the halal diet, especially when admitted to the hospital, and I've had others that strictly follow the diet. So you never know unless you ask. Okay, so now that we've gone over what is allowed, let's go over a question that might show up on the exam. Either way, it's a concept you should know. So let's say you're asked what foods aren't allowed on a halal diet, and these are your four options you can choose from. 1, a grilled cheese sandwich with steamed broccoli. 2, tofu with rice and carrots. 3, a ham sandwich with a side salad and Jell-O for dessert. And 4, cereal with milk, banana, and a hard-boiled egg. So, looking at the options, the ham sandwich comes from pork. It's a pig product. Also, the Jell-O contains gelatin, which is made from pork product too. There is gelatin that's free of animal products and would be allowed on a halal diet, but for the sake of the exam, if you're asked about gelatin, just assume the product contains pork, which isn't allowed on the diet. Unless, of course, it's specified otherwise. Imitation products like fake bacon can be included because it's not real pig. You might be asked about sauces too. Knowing the ingredients and what type of sauce will help you answer the question correctly. So, for example, if any of the dressings or sauces contain alcohol that's cooked down, it's not allowed on a halal diet. When in doubt, take the more conservative approach and offer something that's not questionable. To make things easier, there's several symbols that let you know a food is halal. So when possible, having those products on hand for people who follow a halal diet, especially if you don't work in a kitchen that prepares halal foods on a regular basis, it's a great option to have for these patients. I want to quickly talk about Ramadan, which is an important month in Islamic faith. It's a holy month of fasting. During Ramadan, fasting takes place from sunrise to sunset. So food needs to be consumed after the sun sets in the evening and before the sun comes up in the morning. Eating and drinking isn't allowed in the day. I had a friend who was Muslim and had the opportunity to celebrate the feast at the end of Ramadan. Everyone came together. There was so much love and laughter, joy and happiness. And yep, there was a lot of food. It really was a beautiful experience and something I never experienced before. So if you have a client who's celebrating Ramadan, the timing of food consumed in a 24-hour period needs to be considered. And keep in mind that it could have an impact on their meals if it's something you're helping them with. So let's move on to the kosher diet, which is very similar to the halal diet. Actually, I've had patients who will consume kosher meals when halal meals aren't available. So there are similarities. The kosher diet needs to follow the kosher dietary laws. Just like with halal foods, kosher foods are identified with a symbol too. Kosher means pure or clean. So because of this, certain foods that aren't seen as clean aren't allowed on the diet. So what are those foods? Well, foods not allowed on a kosher diet are pork, horse, rabbits, and shellfish. Other meats are allowed, such as cow, goats, bison, and sheep, but they need to be slaughtered a particular way, and they must be blessed by a rabbi in order for them to be kosher. Fish that have fins and scales are allowed. Remember that shellfish isn't allowed, but fish with fins and scales, they can be eaten. Kosher dairy products must come from a kosher animal. So that means that milk, cheese, yogurt, and milk derivatives are allowed if they come from goats, cow, bison, and sheep that are kosher. Eggs are also allowed, but they can't have any visible blood in the egg. A big rule with kosher dietary law is that meat and dairy can't be served together. But beyond that, according to kosher law, any plates, utensils, and cooking ware such as pots and pans need to prepare meat and dairy separate. This means that plates that serve meat need to be washed and reused for meat. They can't be cleaned and then used for serving dairy products. So a kosher kitchen would have separate dishes for just meat and another set of dishes for dairy, and they can't be mixed up even after being washed. Also, in order for a kitchen to designate themselves as kosher, they need to follow all kosher laws. So back onto the topic of dairy. It is allowed to be eaten. It just can't be served and prepared with meat products, and the utensils need to be separate. But that doesn't mean that dairy can't be eaten. So the rule, according to kosher law, is that dairy can be eaten 1 to 6 hours after meat has been eaten. So let's go over an example of what is allowed on a kosher diet. If you're asked on the exam to identify foods that aren't kosher, an example would be spaghetti with meat sauce sprinkled with cheddar cheese or Parmesan cheese, because the meat sauce has meat and cheese is a dairy product. What would be allowed would be something like macaroni and cheese balls with green beans and carrots, or a cheese pizza with green beans and carrots on the side. The dish doesn't have any meat, so the dairy is fine to eat. In this example, the vegetables, the pasta, the grains are all neutral. So what do I mean by neutral? Well, neutral foods can be served with meat and dairy products. Neutral foods are called parva. And these neutral foods are foods such as fruits, vegetables, pasta, eggs, grains, and juice. Just like with the halal diet, imitation products such as imitation bacon and crab that can be found in a lot of foods can be included in the diet because they follow kosher law. So if a rabbi were to visit a kitchen that says that they follow kosher law, they might ask about the dishes used in the kitchen, and they might ask about the combination foods to make sure that the meat and dairy aren't being mixed. Every day we eat a lot of combined foods, such as casseroles and pasta dishes. Meatloaf might also have milk and dairy products, so it wouldn't be allowed in a kitchen that's claiming that they're kosher. So if someone comes to your facility and you don't have a kosher kitchen, they might ask about the combination foods to make sure they're appropriate for the kosher diet. And thankfully, nowadays, our meal ordering system in the kitchens usually are programmed for allergens and can also be coded for non-compliant foods on diets such as the kosher diet. So we do have some things in place to make sure that the appropriate foods are given to the appropriate patients. Moving on to Seventh-day Adventists. In Loma Linda, California, there's a large population of Seventh-day Adventists. This is one of the reasons Loma Linda is a blue zone, which is where a lot of centenarians or people who live to be 100 years old or older live, which is so incredible and fascinating. Dietary practices and lifestyle choices are a huge reason for their longevity. They look at food and beverages as a way to preserve their health and a way to honor God. So overindulging is not part of their lifestyle or their beliefs. And taking care of one's body in the living is extremely important. Seventh-day Adventists don't drink caffeine or alcohol. Also, pork products are excluded. And as a general rule, they follow a vegetarian or plant-based diet. But like with anything, some people may allow meat and fish as long as there's no pork. Low-fat dairy products and eggs are allowed. Again, if you have a patient who follows a Seventh-day Adventist diet, you can just ask and see what they'll eat. A lot of times when they're admitted to the hospital, they can just indicate what foods they won't eat, and then that can be updated as part of their food preferences. They might even ask just to be put on a vegetarian diet or even a vegan diet if they don't want to eat any dairy products. So if you get a question on the exam about what someone who's a Seventh-day Adventist would eat, look at the options and make sure that it doesn't have caffeine, alcohol, or pork. Those are the foods that are excluded. Remember, when taking the exam, eliminate the obviously wrong options and then work your way through the other options until you get to the right answer. So moving on to Roman Catholic dietary laws. Roman Catholics consume fish on Fridays during Lent. Fish is also served on Ash Wednesday. I've always worked places that serve fish on Fridays throughout the year. Some people like fish on Fridays, and that way when Lent comes around, the menu is already compliant for the diet. So this is something you could do if fish is available to you and you're planning a menu. Even if someone isn't Roman Catholic, they can have fish on Friday if they like it. Red meat isn't allowed on Fridays during Lent because fish should be eaten instead. Okay, so let's move on to Buddhism. Buddhists avoid animal products in general and are often vegetarian. For Buddhists, plant-based foods are recommended and they're viewed as the most wholesome foods. They may eat fish from time to time, but it depends on the individual. Monks also practice fasting. Unlike other religions, alcohol is allowed with this religion. Now let's talk a little about Hinduism. In Hindu culture, beef is not eaten because cows are seen as a sacred animal. Other animals such as pork, fish, and chicken are also avoided. Because of this, most Hindus are vegetarian. Dairy and eggs are typically allowed, but having said that, some may choose to be vegan and follow a strict plant-based diet. And then the last one for Mormons, they don't have a lot of dietary restrictions. All foods are allowed unless someone has specific dietary restrictions for personal reasons. But according to Mormon faith, they aren't allowed to have alcohol or caffeine. So coffee and tea isn't allowed. So that's a quick review of some of the common cultural foods. But I do want to take a minute to go over some other dietary restrictions because people might follow these diets and have these restrictions for other reasons. People who follow a gluten-free diet usually have celiac disease or they have a gluten sensitivity. It has become more trendy where people follow a gluten-free diet because they think it's healthier. But generally speaking, a gluten-free diet is for people who have celiac disease or they have a sensitivity to gluten. Wheat contains gluten, so that means foods that contain wheat can't be eaten. Also, rye, barley, and oats aren't allowed unless the oats are specified to be gluten-free. A lot of sauces contain gluten because a lot of sauces have soy sauce as a base. And soy sauce, unfortunately, contains wheat. You can get gluten-free soy sauce, but this is something you have to be aware of if you work in food service. And of course, if you're helping somebody who follows a gluten-free diet. So I mentioned a little earlier that Buddhists and Hindus tend to be vegetarian. If you work in food service, you have to look at the diet manual to see how vegetarian is coded, because there are different types of vegetarian. The vegetarian diet is a popular diet, and there's different types of vegetarian diets, so I want to do a quick review. Lacto-ovo-vegetarians don't eat meat, but they're allowed to have milk and eggs. The easy way to remember it is lacto for lactose, which is in milk, and then ovo for eggs. Lacto-vegetarians don't eat meat or eggs, but they are allowed to eat dairy products and drink milk. Ovo-vegetarians don't eat dairy products or drink cow's milk, but they eat eggs. Ovo-vegetarians don't eat dairy products or drink milk, and they also don't eat any meat, but they do eat eggs. People who are ovo-vegetarians will consume milk alternative products such as almond, oat, and coconut milks, and then same thing with the yogurts and cheeses. And then pescatarians eat fish, but they won't eat meat. They may or may not eat other animal products such as eggs and milk. It depends on how strict the person is with the foods they will and won't eat. And lastly, vegans don't eat any animal products, and many vegans also won't eat honey because it's made from bees. Anything with gelatin isn't allowed, which means Jell-O, marshmallows, and gummy candies that contain gelatin are eliminated from the diet. There are gelatin-free marshmallows and gummies available on the market that vegans can eat. And I wanted to mention one more thing. I've seen this so many times working in a hospital. I'd be very surprised if you don't come across this at some point, especially if you work in a hospital. Many patients will come in and say they're allergic to milk, so it's added to their chart, and then the meal ordering system restricts all foods that contain milk. But when you talk to the patient, they'll say, I can have foods with milk, I'm just lactose intolerant, so I can't drink milk. The problem is that when milk is added as an allergy, all the foods that contain milk aren't allowed. So we have to get them to remove the milk allergy so they can actually eat more foods. So in these cases, you have to talk to the patient to see what exactly they can't have. And when you confirm that it's not a milk protein allergy, it's actually lactose intolerance, then you can update the chart. Because a milk allergy is really restrictive. So keep that in mind when someone says that they have a milk allergy. It is very different than someone who has lactose intolerance. It's always best to ask and clarify. Usually in those cases, people will complain and say that their meals are boring, and that's when you figure out, oh, it says there's a milk allergy, but really what they need to specify is that they're lactose intolerant and they just can't have milk to drink. Or yogurt and cheese, depending on how severely lactose intolerant they are. So you now have what you need to not only nail these type of questions on the RD exam, but also to be able to help your clients and patients who follow these particular diets. It always makes people feel good to know that they're respected and that their wishes are followed. Before we go, I just want to say a couple things. If you're feeling nervous about taking the exam for the first time, or if you've taken the exam and didn't pass, it can feel really lonely. If you didn't pass, it's so frustrating and disappointing. And it's super easy to spiral down a rabbit hole into negative self-talk. So if that's how you're feeling, I want you to really hear me right now. The RD exam doesn't define you. It's not a reflection of the type of dietitian you're going to be. I know several RDs who didn't pass the RD exam the first or even the second time, and they're now amazing dietitians. Test taking isn't easy for everyone, and one test doesn't define who you are or the skills you have. It doesn't define how amazing you'll be or who you'll be able to reach once you become a dietitian. And it absolutely doesn't change the impact you're already having in this world. So if you're struggling getting across the finish line, please hear me when I say this isn't a representation of who you are or the type of RD you'll be. And know that you have people cheering you on. They're wishing you the absolute best. That's why I'm here, creating episodes to help you along the way, and at the very least, help you feel motivated and inspired to keep going. So you have a cheerleader and RD who cares about you and wants the absolute best for you. Keep going. You'll get there. And when you do,
It's going to be amazing. Stay on top of your study game. There's no limits to achieving the success you so deeply desire. Until next time. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could subscribe and leave a review. Share this episode with your fellow RD2Bs and coworkers, and spread the word on Instagram at JanaNicoleRD. Believe in yourself. You've got this. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you next time on the RD Exam Made Easy podcast. Bye for now.